Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Alex Hornaday, and my registration number is 4717. Please excuse my nerves. This is a new experience for me before this body. This case is about an unsophisticated group of lay people who don't constitute a political committee being punished for their failure to follow rules imposed on a political committee. Although there are some facts that muddy that a bit. In March 2009,
you can elevate the podium for it to be easier.
Thank you. In March 2009, a group of citizens in Pueblo were concerned about tax and spending issues as well as what they thought as constitutional issues. None of them were lawyers or campaign professionals or had any significant experience with Colorado's complex campaign finance regime or really proceedings in the administrative court. They formed a club they called the Southern Colorado Tea Party, probably referred to as the Tea Party as we go through this. They had no formal articles of incorporation, no bylaws. Some of them gave themselves titles, but largely it was a rather informal group. They organized courthouse rallies, held meetings which members would discuss issues of public concern. Then in 2010, they endorsed some candidates on their website and gave two candidates $200 each for a total of $400. They did so without registering as a political committee or filing disclosure requiring political committees. Because they hadn't filed those disclosures or registered, a complaint was filed against them. As campaign finance complaints go through the administrative courts, none of them, unfortunately, were terribly familiar with that. In fact, administrative courts tend to be unfamiliar to most ordinary citizens. They also received a subpoena for documents and depositions from one of the country's top liberal election lawyers. They didn't think he had the right to do that, but of course they did. Not really realizing the seriousness of the situation, they did not participate in the hearing.
There's no question that they got the complaint, they got the subpoenas, they knew the procedures were going on, right?
There is no question that they got that.
And correct. They didn't do anything to contact the Secretary of State's office or the administrative law judge or respond to the lawyer in any way. They just kind of ignored it?
That is correct. It was a lapse on their part.
Okay.
And it's a lapse that perhaps is not excusable, but it is a lapse that, because they're unsophisticated, may be understandable. The default judgment was entered because they didn't participate in the hearing. They didn't comply with the discovery requests, but the ALJ kept the matter open for penalties. After the default, that's when they received something from the Denver District Court. That's when they realized that this was a real serious matter, and they hired counsel at that time, we moved to overturn the default. The ALJ declined to do that. But he did allow the Tea Party to present evidence at the penalties hearing on whether the Tea Party should genuinely be considered a political committee, and the Tea Party did so. In fact, a lot of the day was spent on that very question. But after accepting that evidence, with no objection opposing counsel, the ALJ did not consider it at all.
When the judge denied your motion to set it, I think you filed a motion to set aside the default, right? Judge denied your motion, did you consider that you had the right to appeal that order?
At the time, the three things that the judge needed to consider for overturning the default, he decided that the neglect was not excusable, and that is a point that we have resigned ourselves to. In fact, I mentioned that earlier. And so, although we still believe that we have the meritorious defense, and the ALJ made no determination on that defense, we decided to focus on that at the penalty stage.
Well, let me ask it another way. Mm-hmm. I asked, did you consider whether you could file a notice of appeal? Was it a conscious decision not to file a notice of appeal from the default denial? I mean, the denial to overturn the default?
We did make that decision because based on the excusable neglect criteria, we didn't think that we'd be able to overcome that.
Was the hearing on the penalties, was that noticed by a written notice of some sort?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did that notice indicate to the respondents that they could raise this issue of whether they were a political committee, or is that just your idea that you thought you could do this?
Not in the notice, but at the stage when we were discussing overturning the default, in the appellee's response to the motion to overturn default, appellee even indicated that it would be within the ALJ's discretion to allow that, and at the hearing, indeed, he did allow it.
Okay.
Well, help me understand this. Is it your position that the issue of whether or not your client is a political committee is still ripe because it was raised at the penalty stage?
The position is that while the time is long past to overturn the default, and indeed in his default order, the ALJ made the conclusion of law, though we called it finding the fact, that the ALJ is a political committee. At the penalty stage, he allowed that issue to remain in order to determine an appropriate amount of penalty. And so what I'm asking this body to do is to overturn the amount of penalty on the basis that the actual real-world facts on the ground suggest that under the relevant constitutional standards, the Tea Party is not a political committee, and therefore it is inappropriate to impose a penalty on them for failure to comply with rules relating to political committees.
Okay, I think I understand that position, but didn't the ALJ find your client a political committee in entering the default judgment?
In entering the default judgment, he did accept the complainant's allegation that they were a political committee, and he did put that in his order finding the default judgment.
And, okay. And when you sought to set aside the default, you raised the "we're not a political committee" argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you did not appeal from the order denying the attempt to set aside the default judgment.
And the reason
let's not get to the reason. You did not.
That is correct.
Okay. Help me understand then why the question of whether or not you're a political committee is any longer fair game. It seems to me it was resolved against you in entering the default judgment. Mm-hmm. It was aired in your efforts to set aside the default judgment, and it could have been brought before this court on an appeal from denial of a motion to set aside the default judgment. So with respect, it seems to me you're trying to get at least a second and maybe a third bite at the proverbial apple.
In his denial of setting aside the default judgment, the ALJ made no determination as to the merits of whether they actually are a political committee. I did not believe at that time that was an issue that I could raise with this body because there hadn't been a determination on it for the purposes of maintaining the default judgment.
Well, you could have appealed. Couldn't you have challenged the denial of the motion to set aside the default judgment on the basis that the ALJ didn't address whether you had a meritorious defense?
Perhaps in hindsight, I ought to have. At the time, I was thinking that because the excusable neglect criterion was decided against us, and in a way that I wasn't confident that I had an argument to overcome the excusable neglect criterion decision with this body, that's why I did not appeal at that time. And because the ALJ didn't make the determination regarding the political committee piece of it, I had presumed that issue was still open at the penalty stage.
Can you cite us to any authority suggesting that issue, having been addressed at the default and having at least been raised in the attempt to set aside the default, is still alive at the penalty stage?
I am afraid that I am not prepared to do that.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Okay. Because I'm confident that your honors are familiar with the substance of my argument, I am going to, if I may, reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
I have one more question.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any reason that you offer that we should set aside the penalty as an abuse of discretion or as an excess penalty, other than the argument that the respondent is not a political party?
In addition to the fact that they're not a political party and shouldn't have a penalty imposed on them for that reason, the amount of the penalty is clearly in excess of the public needs for imposing such a penalty, and it's an amount that is extraordinarily severe and indeed crippling to this organization, ultimately for their lapse in filing some paperwork.
Does the record tell us whether the organization even exists anymore?
I don't believe the record reflects that.
Okay.
Although, to my knowledge, my clients do still exist, though in a significantly reduced capacity.
Thank you.
Please the court. My name is Mark Bruce and I represent the FLE, Dr. Maureen Kassan. Rather than get into the facts of this case, which I think are well stated in the briefs, I'd like to go to the core issue, which is, I think, already been identified by the court, whether or not this issue is still right for this court's consideration. I would make two points to begin with. First of all, the ability to take the ALJ's decision on the motion, denying the motion to set aside default, was always before the appellant in this instance, and could have happened on either of two grounds. One, the appellant could have appealed the refusal of the ALJ, based upon the facts that he felt were in the record at that point, to rule on whether or not there was a meritorious defense. Or, had there been an argument made in the papers on the motion to set aside default, that this was somehow an unconstitutional requirement, the political committee definition as applied or officially was unconstitutional. The third factor in that particular test for excusable neglect talks about balance of the equities. There were ample grounds to come to this court and broach either the factual issue of whether or not the Southern Colorado Tea Party was in fact a political committee, or whether or not the constitutional definition of political committee, either as applied or facially, was constitutional. And the appellant decided not to do that. They took their alternative course, which was open to them, which was to make a substantive presentation at the penalty phase, which the appellee, the record reflects, requested.
Why? If you thought the door was closed and they hadn't, why did you even suggest in your brief that they could raise this at the penalty phase?
This court's decision in Culp versus the Colorado Department of Public Health mandates that there be a penalty hearing on the heels of the default. And rather than come to this court and defend a penalty that had not gone through that hearing, we specifically requested that type of a hearing.
Oh, no, I understand that. But I thought you just said, and I thought counsel said, that you suggested that this issue of whether or not the respondent was a political party could be raised again at the penalty phase. Maybe I misunderstood you. Did you suggest that in your brief?
I apologize, Ron, I misunderstood your question. Okay. What we said in our response on the motion to set aside the default was that the penalty hearing could address any issue. And I frankly think that this court's decision in the Alliance for Colorado Families indicates that there, at that level, there is the ability to take on even constitutional issues if they're properly presented to the ALJ, then they can be appealed to this court, however they were. And that frankly, is the essence, I think, of what I would like to argue with the court today. This issue of whether or not the political committee definition in Article 28 of the Colorado Constitution dealing with campaign finance, whether or not that definition is constitutional, was never raised. It didn't come up, not in the motion to set aside the default, and not at the penalty hearing. And what I'd like to do is make sure that, to the extent that it would be helpful to the court, that there are record references that establish exactly that.
Excuse me, Mr. Grootskin. This may be a follow-up on Judge Richmond's question, but why was any evidence regarding whether or not the Tea Party was a political party under the statute relevant at the penalty hearing in the first place?
It's a good question, Aaron. I think that only to the extent that it would have gone to indicate a level of naivete or a level of disconnectedness, it wouldn't have changed the default argument, frankly. And I think what's really important in light of your question is that the factual findings that were made as part of the default were then restated in the ultimate agency decision on the penalty and the attorney's fees question. So the judge not only heard those facts that was presented in the complaint on which there was a default, but then after a day of hearing at which the fundamental evidence was provided by the Tea Party, it didn't change his opinion one bit. And there were five findings that were really important, which you'll find on page of volume 2, page 534. Those findings include that this group was primarily dedicated to endorsing, supporting, and electing candidates, that it had the major purpose of electing candidates, that most of its candidate endorsements and money went to state and local candidates, and that it used its website for the purpose of promoting candidates. So even in the context that this had simply been a default, if there had been no hearing, or if there had been a hearing at which the Tea Party had not appeared, obviously those findings would have still remained. And you're right, there would have been nothing to argue. But when the Tea Party presented its evidence, the administrative law judge was able to both consider the substance of the evidence, weigh the credibility of the individuals testifying on behalf of the Tea Party, and still he found and restated, as I said, his original findings based upon our complaint.
Does that restatement by the ALJ in the penalty hearing somehow revive the Tea Party's ability to now appeal those findings which were originally made in the hearing regarding its order regarding the Tea Party's motion to set aside the default judgment?
I know I'm not supposed to say this at oral argument. That's a really interesting question. I don't believe that the answer to your question is yes. It seems to me that what the judge did was he made the original findings for purposes of establishing liability. Then he restated those findings for purposes of providing an evidentiary basis for the amount of the penalty, which was the only issue that was at stake in April of 2012.
Okay, thank you.
In addition, on page, volume 2, page 538, the ALJ, again, referenced back to his findings of fact to justify the $10,000 penalty. And in terms of the scale of the penalty, let's be clear, he could have imposed a $90,000 penalty. And that's calculated by $50 a day, by 180-day statute of limitations, which is $9,000. There were 9 reporting penalties, and there was another penalty for failure to basically disgorge anonymous contributions. He could have imposed $90,000. We didn't request that. We specifically, on our opening of the penalty hearing, asked him to find a penalty of $10,000. And then not only did he find and impose the lesser amount, but he conditioned the payment of the penalty upon compensation to my client in terms of attorney's fees, which compensation in total was not made. And that's the only reason we're here today. For a lesser amount than the $10,000 penalty on which we're here before you today, the Tea Party could have put this all aside, but they chose not to. To the extent that the as-applied challenge never came up in the motion for default, had it come up in the context of the penalty hearing, it would at least be arguably before you, but it did not. And I think this is important. In its opening statement, the Tea Party said, volume 5, page 11, lines 4 to 10, our position is that the Southern Colorado Tea Party does not have the major purpose of supporting or opposing candidates for electoral office, and as such, it was not, is not, and never has been subject to reporting requirements, and an appropriate penalty for that would be zero.
Now that's, you're saying that isn't the as-applied challenge, that's simply an evidentiary argument that takes the constitutional and statutory provisions as they're drafted.
Exactly, exactly. The presumption at that point is that the major purpose applies, not that the constitutional definition does not apply. The Mr. DeLogic's was interesting because in trying to get clarity at the end of the case, he said, and this can be found on page 317 of volume 5, the only reason we're talking about this is to blunt the assessment of the fine that maybe it, the Southern Colorado Tea Party's political purpose, wasn't that major. Not sure what that major is as opposed to major, but the point is the judge left an opening for the Tea Party to establish that, in fact, there was some evidentiary basis for it to have forgiveness. Because again, under Article 28, an administrative law judge is entitled to determine an appropriate order and penalty. And basically, he was asking for that opportunity. To that question, the Tea Party responded, yes, and this is on page 318, yes, while there's a legal finding, this is binding on us today, that if the Tea Party did have the major purpose of supporting candidates, I'm merely offering this information to suggest that while this is the legal conclusion we are operating under today, factually, that may not be the case. So there was a concession at the penalty hearing that the legal issue was not on the table. If it was not on the table at the penalty hearing, it was not on the table in the motion to set aside the default, which hasn't been appealed, cannot be on the table for you today. There is one other issue that was raised in the reply brief that I'd like to address. The suggestion was that there was reliance on the part of the Tea Party on an administrative regulation by the Secretary of State defining the term political committee to mean, to include the major purpose and to mean a majority of spending of the group. And at volume 5, page 313, on page 296, I had raised in my closing argument a case that this court decided, the Citizens for Ethics and Government versus Committee for the American Dream at 187 Pacific 3rd, 1207, in which case the court said, Secretary of State's rules are prospective in nature. And so our argument was, you can't really rely upon a rule that had just been adopted to determine the appropriateness of conduct that had occurred almost 2 years prior. And in closing, the Tea Party stated on page 313, the Secretary of State's rules are prospective. I'm not saying that. because it was subsequently adopted, it should apply. So it seems to me that the issue of whether or not the Secretary of State's rule was somehow cover for what the Tea Party had done is not properly before this court. I appreciate the opportunity to address issues with the court. If there are no other questions, I'll leave the rest of my time for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you again, Your Honors, for this opportunity to address some of the things that the opposing counsel raised. Starting from the end of his presentation, yes, it is correct that the Secretary of State's rule was prospective, and I didn't offer it at any time to suggest that it wasn't, but what I did offer it both as to inform the court that that was that didn't come out of thin air, that that rule was based upon the case law that was decided prior to the activities that we're talking about here. And so, although it hadn't been codified in the rules, they did still apply. The opposing counsel, both in his presentation and in his answer brief, talked quite a bit about the constitutionality issue, whether it was properly raised. While I would be delighted for this court to consider the constitutionality, that my real purpose is to demonstrate that primary purpose is an integral part of the definition of a political committee, and that was an argument that I've made at every stage, including at the penalties hearing.
Okay, but did you make it in the context of a constitutional flaw, or did you make it in the context of essentially sufficiency of the evidence, or both, I suppose?
The context I made is I presume that that was a settled issue. It did not seem to me that, and I could not have expected that the ALJ would not have considered the evidence on that issue, on that question. And indeed, the ALJ did reiterate, rather perfunctorily, finding facts from the default stage that included that, but he made no reference to the credibility or the sufficiency of the evidence. And as I'm running out of time, I would note two things. One, the amount of the attorney's fees, while it was less than $10,000, was only just a couple $100 less than $10,000. And the ALJ himself noted that a penalty of $10,000 or about will be like squeezing blood from a turnip. And that's my time.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course.